This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man they can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
Call him every trash, CMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Centery, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time, we provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
And a good Tuesday morning to you and yours, March the 30th, 2021. Big show on tap today. We have a little CMT at 6:45, and right after that, Mike is always punctual, Tenenbaum, 7 o'clock, 7:30, Matt Miller talking NFL draft. First half of the Knicks game looked good last night, and then that fell apart quickly via Jimmy Butler. Lot to do. Let's say good morning. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dave. Hope you and Rick are doing well. It must be a great country we're living in when you got a shortstop that tells the team when he wants to get paid and he's willing to turn down $325 million in order to accomplish his contractual goals. Must be a great country.
Yeah, in some ways it is a great country. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
It'll be even a better country, David. No, don't bury the lead. Jimmy What's Harden. Lead? Jimmy Harden, buddy. 38-point triple-double in a win.
He's not. He's. I mean, you're.
Glory be to God. All praises do Allah. God bless America.
He's not winning the MVP.
I can feel the video coming. I can feel it.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler looked like Jimmy Butler. I said Jimmy Butler. He looked like an MVP in the third quarter last night in the Knicks game. But James Harden has got something on his mind. He said he was going to be the MVP, and he looks like he's trying to get it now. Like, you can tell when a player is trying to go out there and accomplish that goal. Like when Russell Westbrook won the MVP. It feels like James Harden has that same mindset right now.
All right. Listen, I'm looking at the most recent odds, updated 17 hours ago.
Here we go.
And I mean, you have to, no?
All right, go ahead.
I will tell you this. He is now the tied for second favorite to win MVP. He's at plus 700. But Jokic is better than even money, guys. He's, a dominant favorite to win this thing.
Okay. All James Harden is going to keep going out there and doing is giving you 40-point triple-doubles, Dave. And if he keeps doing that week over week, I guarantee you that gap will shrink significantly by the time we get to the end of the regular season.
Maybe so. But I still am not even a little bit concerned. I am concerned with the Knicks putting the ball in the basket. And last night, they could not put the ball in the basket in the second. Well, they couldn't do it in the first half, but neither could Miami. But then it felt like Jimmy Butler at halftime was like, all right, guys, get on my back. Let's take care of business. And they're just better. The Knicks played hard. The Knicks they can't score. And Miami, when they play well, is just a better team than the Knicks.
I mean, Jimmy Butler took four shots in the first half, and then he decided in the third quarter that he was going to turn it on. He was going to take over the game. I mean, that was Julius Randle didn't look like himself. He wasn't great last night.
Bam Adebayo had a lot to do with that.
He's good.
Well, yeah. I mean, Bam Adebayo had 8 offensive rebounds. I mean, there was that one stretch in the fourth quarter where they had 3 straight offensive rebounds, and then Hero hits the 3. I mean, it looked like Miami was the more desperate team last night. Miami came into that game on a 6-game losing streak. Knicks had won 3 straight. Their best player wasn't at his best. And, I mean, that really, for me, again, and this is something the Knicks are going to have to figure out, was zone defense again. The Knicks struggle with the zone defense, and teams are figuring it out. And that's going to be something down the stretch they're going to have to work. I mean, they're going to have to be able to figure out. Otherwise, it's going to be tough sledding offensively for them.
Yeah, it will be tough sledding offensively. But I think the key for the Knicks in order to get them going on that side of the court is being able to get stops and get out in transition. Because you saw it with that second unit in the second quarter. They had a stretch where they had a 16-0 run. And you saw Nerlens Noel getting defensive rebounds, getting blocked shots, them being able to get steals, and then get out on the fast break, and that led to a lot of easy buckets. Like for a team that's offensively challenged, that's going to have to be their formula when they're playing a tough, physical defensive team like Miami that can switch it up and go from man-to-man to that zone defense you were talking about, Rico. So I think that has to be more of a priority. Like, I understand this team is going to live and die by their defense, but it becomes especially important when you're playing against a team that's as good defensively as the Miami Heat, because your ability to be able to score in the half court is limited because you just don't have the firepower that these other teams do.
See, I don't have this great displeasure with the game last night. Sure, I'm upset they lost, and I would love to get the victory there. But at the end of the day, Miami's way more talented than the Knicks. I mean, they're really well coached, and they were committed to winning that game. And you saw it. Like, they played the advantage the Knicks have typically, it feels like, is they play harder than the other team. And I didn't have that feeling last night. I felt like Miami was toe-to-toe with the Knicks, especially in the second half. And they were probably the team with more energy and played more desperate. And I just don't know how the Knicks win a lot of games when the teams they go up against are more talented than they are, and they want to win like Miami did last night.
No, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I said that to start the show. I mean, Miami looked like the more desperate team. But again, I mean, first half of that game, Miami scores 36 points. They go off at 39 in the third quarter. I mean, the difference in that game last night was Jimmy Butler and what he did in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just the point I'm making, Dave, is teams are starting to figure out how to slow down the Knicks. And now we're getting to a point of the season where these games are going to start to really matter, right? And everyone in the East is all piled
up.
Yes,
and every team is going to give you that kind of effort as we move towards the end of the season. Correct.
So that's something they're going to have to work on. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to take whatever they decide they need to do to break down that zone. And it usually is, you know, dribble penetration from your point guard, which is something that they don't really necessarily have currently on this team. But, last night was an important game. It was because, I mean, the Miami Heat are the team, you know, the team that's right there in the mix, the team that you're battling
for. But realistically, do you think the Knicks are going to finish ahead of the Miami Heat? We have to be honest about things. There's no way that I look at these two teams and think the Knicks are going to wind up with a better record and a higher seeding than Miami.
Well, they might not finish ahead of the Miami Heat, but they're going to have to figure out how they can win one of those games against the Miami Heat. So far, they're 0 for this season. So, I mean, you'd like to see them try to figure out how to, you know, find answers to the different things that the Heat are throwing at them and being able to counteract that. R.J. Barrett, you'd like to see him be a little bit better against the Miami Heat. I think this is the second game against them. He was held under double-digit point scoring. So I look at it and say, I understand it's a well-coached team, and I understand it's almost like looking in a mirror, but you have lesser offensive talent than they do. But you'd like to see them being able to find more answers when they're going up against opponents like that, because that's the style of play that you're going to see with playoff basketball. So you would like to see this team continue to build toward a formula that they can use and have success with once we get to the end of the regular season and on into the postseason.
I mean, if you're not going to have, I mean, if R.J. Barrett's going to struggle to score, I mean, he had 8 points last night. Like, if he's going to struggle to score, if Alec Burks isn't giving you what you've seen over the last, you know, five games, I mean, he only had 6 points. This is not a great offensive team.
No, Mm-mm. No, but I'm not surprised by it, is my point. But my point is that it doesn't surprise me. And Chris says, you got to figure it out. I don't know that you can. I think if Miami plays well and Miami plays hard and they're motivated to win, I don't think you're going to beat the Miami Heat very often.
Well, if Miami plays their A game, you're probably not. But Miami didn't have their A game last night. They didn't. And to what Rick's point was, I mean, there are things you can do against a zone to be able to break that down. Like the Knicks kind of trying to freelance against a zone defense, that's not going to work because you don't have the talent to make that style of play work. Like, you're going to have to be relying on crisp passing and making sure you make the extra pass, get the ball to the open guy, and knock down shots. Like, that's what you're going to have to do. And the fact that you were lacking on the execution end in your half-court offense, that opened the door for the Miami Heat to take advantage of some of your miscues in the second half. So, I mean, I think that you've got to find a way to be able to turn that corner. You've got to find a way to get it going offensively when your team is struggling the way that they were last night. And I would think that once we've got to this point in the season, 45 games in, whatever it is, I mean, you'd like to see them being able to have more answers to some of the problems that we saw early on in the year.
All right, let's take a listen. Here is the head coach of the Knicks, Tom Thibodeau. What wasn't working against Miami last night?
Well, we didn't make shots early on. You know, we couldn't get the three to go. And then, that was probably the big thing offensively. The shooting piece of it is critical. But again, like I said, we had the 7-point lead, you know, at half, and we came out those first 5 minutes of the third. They got us.
How frustrating is it when you give so much in the first half? And I know they didn't play well. I'm not arguing that they played really well, but they had a 7-point lead, and you snap your fingers, and it's like, all right, all that work, all that effort, all that grinding it out to get a 7-point lead is now done, gone, as Miami ran past them in the third quarter. I mean, that's difficult.
Yeah, but again, I mean, this is another one of those situations where You know, it's tough to play the kind of defense or give the kind of effort that you need when you're not as talented as the other team, when you're not making shots. I mean, that's not easy to do. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, as good as Julius Randle has been this season, I mean, he's not Jimmy Butler. He's not.
No.
Like, Jimmy Butler can get a shot when he needs to get a shot.
Yeah.
And he decided in that, I mean, after taking four shots in the first half, he said, you know what, it's time for me to take over this game. And that's exactly what he did in the third quarter. And the Knicks are limited. We all understand that. Offensively, they are limited. And you're right. When they play against a team that is more talented and is working just as hard defensively as they are, they're going to struggle to win. But at some point, they're going to have to figure this out because they're going to see this style of defense with the zone defense. They saw it against Milwaukee. They struggled. They saw it again last night against Miami. They struggled. Teams aren't stupid.
No.
This is going to be, it's a copycat league. They're going to see that this team struggles with the zone defense, so we're going to keep throwing it at them.
That's right.
Well, and you see how frustrated.
You don't have a point guard.
Well, and the Knicks got frustrated. They did. That's frustrating, man. I mean, when you're not making shots and all of a sudden you're going to go play lockdown defense, that ain't easy to do. And you saw that. I mean, the offensive rebounds were a huge problem. And again, the free throw shooting for the Knicks. Like, I get it. You're not hitting your threes. You got to make your free throws.
Yes. That
another
I agree
game
with.
Again last night where they missed, I mean, they ended up missing 8 free throws last night. Got to take advantage of those situations. They don't get to the line a lot, period, anyway.
No.
But when you do, you got to make your shots.
No. Listen, they're a very flawed team. Now, the game that I look at and I circle is next up, Minnesota. Because that's a game you have to win. Like this game last night, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you guys disagree. I'm upset they lost. I'm not horrified that they lost to Miami.
No.
Like, to me, it's a game if Miami plays well, I expect them to lose. When they play Minnesota next up, that's a game you have to win. And the thing that I like about this team at Thibodeau is that's what they've done all year long. They've gotten the wins, you know, here and there against the good teams, but they have really had their way against the bad teams.
Yeah, but you'd expect that they'd handle their business against Minnesota. Like, I understand that Minnesota played that close game last night against the Nets, but if you watched the Nets, they look like they just rolled the basketball out there. So, I mean, Minnesota is one of the worst teams in the NBA, and the Knicks, throughout the entire year, have taken care of their business when they're playing against inferior competition. So I would expect that on Wednesday night, we're going to see a good effort from the Knicks, and it's going to be one of those dominant performances like we've seen them have, like they had a couple of weeks ago against the Wizards in the first game of that 2-game set. So that's what I'm anticipating on Wednesday night. There's no reason for us to think otherwise. You look at a Miami Heat team that was in the NBA Finals a year ago, and they're looking up in the standings at the New York Knicks. You knew that they were going to give you their best shot coming out in the second half, and the Knicks weren't able to get off the mat once they took that punch. But I would expect that they're going to bounce back after this L.
You know what's amazing, too? I was watching both of those games last night. I was watching the Knicks and the Nets.
Could they be more polar opposite, by the way?
I mean, just the first half of that game. I mean, honestly, the first half of that game on both sides. I mean, how bad both offenses were. I mean, second quarter was better for the Knicks. They went on that 16-0 run. Mm-hmm. But in general, the offense in the first half was brutal.
Brutal. Yeah.
Miami had 36 points in the first half. The Nets scored 37 in the first quarter.
Well, what did Miami score in the third quarter even?
They ended up getting 39. Obviously.
39 points. Yeah.
So, in the third quarter, they turned it on. But that's, I mean, that Brooklyn does that whenever they want.
They can score at will. At will. Whatever if they go into a game and say we want to score 140 and that's our goal, they can get to 140. Like they are the exact opposite of what the Knicks can bring to the table.
Dave, there was a stretch in that game last night in the first quarter where Kyrie Irving scored 12 straight. I mean, he's giving guys Euro steps. He's shooting three-pointers off of one leg. I mean, the guy is just phenomenal. I mean, he was the one that kind of got them out to that big lead in the first quarter, and then James Harden closed the show in the fourth quarter. I mean, that wasn't a game where Brooklyn was dialed in at all. Now, did they get some key stops late? Yeah, Jeff Green had a good stop against Anthony Edwards, and then James Harden at the end not fouling on that three-point attempt. I thought that was a good play by him. But, I mean, those were the stops that they really locked in on defense. But, I mean, otherwise, the Nets are like, you know what, this is a terrible team.
Yeah, they can
walk
through it.
We're talented enough to just be able to go out there and beat them.
Yeah, they can sleepwalk through any game they want.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Got to be honest with you. I'm a little bit concerned about a member of our show.
Who is it?
RJ Santillo.
Because of the Sabres?
No. Maybe that, but he gambles a lot. And I'm becoming concerned with the just amount of times he mentions gambling during.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Yeah.
Our RJ gambles?
Box pools, this.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Some of those, you know, people that you don't even know could be the worst offenders in this degenerate ring.
So now if we go to Vegas for the Mole People documentary.
Yes.
Well, now I don't feel comfortable taking RJ now.
But why do you feel comfortable taking me?
Well, because I just want to see you in Vegas. This is the whole point. Like, I'm doing the Mole People doc just to bring you. This is the reason we get you to Vegas now. Otherwise, you know Sherry's not going to let you go to Vegas. This is the only way to get you to Vegas.
But yeah, RJ has a secret obsession with gambling. Every day, it's like, I bet on this. I said, oh, RJ, do you do fantasy baseball? Oh, yeah, I do fantasy baseball. I'm going to home run this. There's nothing that he doesn't have covered.
I'm a big fan of the gimmick gambling. I don't bet games, spreads, long season, things like that. But I was telling Dave that I'm in a box pool for March Madness, and I'd asked him if he'd ever heard such a thing.
And he has never heard of such a thing.
You would.
What
do
exactly
it,
is a
Did
box
you just
pool?
Refer to yourself in third person?
Yeah, you confused me there. So
right?
I don't know who you're talking to. But it's 5:21 in the morning. You got to take it.
Yes, I did, Chris. Yeah.
But it works the same way as the Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl, you get like an NFC and an AFC team. This is just a winning and a losing team. So whatever the final score is, you get a winning and a losing team. And I was telling Dave that it keeps you invested at the end of blowout games.
I worry for him. I mean, he's about to get married. I here's my question to you. Does your future wife, just months away, does she know that you have this problem?
It is not a problem. I've told you the dollar amounts, and they're minuscule as compared to...
Mm. For now.
Yeah,
for now.
I don't know, Dave. That sounds like that's a problem waiting to happen.
You let him go to Vegas, we definitely not going to see him.
It's not an issue, but here's what you're saying, and this is why I worry for you and for Ange as well, is you need action to enjoy the games at this point. That's what you've said. You need something like a sweetener at the end of games to really move the needle. That, to me, sounds like a problem.
Well, I've mentioned to you that the Fantasy Baseball League I've done forever, helps with baseball season. Because baseball, I don't watch many non-New York baseball games. I don't know about you guys, but it helps.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. We'll get this will be the true test. If we show up at the wedding and all of a sudden we have, you know, paper plates and plastic cutlery.
Or maybe there's a sheet when you fill out when you walk in, over under on ceremony length.
That's right. At like 11 o'clock, RJ's going to run around and be like, guys, you got to go. Why? I have the under of 11:15. That would probably be a bad sign. A little degenerate.
Listen, you're the one with a 12-hour auction fantasy baseball league.
It took 6 hours.
That's
on Sunday.
Long. That's too
it,
long.
It was a very long time, but I admittedly have an issue. You're someone who, like, behind closed doors might have an issue. And as someone that has an issue, that has admitted that gambling is not good for me, I see that in you, and I'm trying to get ahead of it for you.
So what you're telling me is you want in on the box pool next March Madness.
Exactly. All yeah, right. If I could get a couple boxes, that would be that would be great. And I may or may not borrow money from one Francisco Lindor, who apparently was offered 10 years and $325 million, and no, he won't take it. He wants 12 and 385. I don't know about you guys. At this point, if I'm Steve Cohen, I might just say, you know what? Forget it. Forget it. With the free agents that are going to be available on the open market in the offseason, you think there's any way this guy's going to get 12 and 385 on the open market? There is no chance.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening, Dave. And to take it a step further, like for Lindor to turn down a 10-year deal paying him $32.5 million a year with the uncertainty due to the pandemic climate and not knowing what's going to happen when the MLBPA and the owners sit down to negotiate the collective bargaining agreement, I don't know that he's going to get a better offer in free agency after the year. Like, I just don't see how that's possible. Like, he's taking a huge risk, and I don't know that it would be worth it to take that risk when you've got $325 million sitting there right there for you to take it. Like, Steve Cohen and the Mets have put out a pile of money for Lindor right now. Like, it's not like if he took that deal, people would say he's underpaid. Like, he'd be one of the highest paid players in baseball. So to turn down that deal, I don't know, man. That's a lot. I mean, he would be tied for the fifth biggest deal in baseball history. I don't understand why if he wants to get a deal done before the season starts, why he would take that risk.
Well, I don't think he's overly concerned with getting the deal done before the season starts.
Well, that was his drop-dead deadline, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, he
put a deadline out there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying he's comfortable going to free agency and taking his chances in free agency. I mean, he's got the leverage right now. In this situation, he's got the leverage.
You think he's going to get a deal for 10 for $325 elsewhere?
No, I don't. But right now, he's going to exert as much power, as much leverage as he can on Steve Cohen. Because Steve Cohen decided that he wanted to, you know, do what he does on Twitter and ask the fan base, what do you think Lindor will sign for? I'm going to crowdsource it. I mean, this is if he doesn't get this deal done, if Steve Cohen doesn't get this deal done with Francisco Lindor, it's going to be a bad look for Steve Cohen.
A terrible look. I don't know why. I almost feel like someone, his wife or someone at the Met should go into him and be like, yeah, maybe you should go off Twitter. Like, what benefit do you have of putting all these tweets out
well,
there?
Well, he did.
The universe?
With that whole GameStop,
yeah,
he went off Twitter. Now he's back. Yeah, I don't understand it. Like, if this was, like, unless you knew the deal was done, agreed on, I mean, on the verge of being signed, like, deal was done. I don't know what the benefit of going on Twitter and asking the Mets fan base, what do you think he'll sign for, was. Or that dinner and he had chicken parm. I don't understand that.
Which wasn't good, apparently.
Well, I think him leaking out what their offer was and what the counter proposal from Lindor's camp was, I think that's him trying to get ahead of it in case they don't sign a deal, in case something doesn't get done in the next couple of days before the season starts, because now it just looks like it's Lindor being greedy or maybe overstepping as opposed to the Mets nickel and diamond as we've seen the team do in the past. Like, this is... To me, this is a new day with the Mets in terms of the territory that they're playing in and the fact that they're willing to pay him over $300 million on a 10-year deal. I mean, it kind of puts the ball in Lindor's court.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can say that, and I would have a hard time turning down 10 years for, you know, $325 million.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't roll the dice, especially with the uncertainty of what's going to happen with this new collective bargaining agreement. So, I mean, if I'm Lindor, I take this right up to the wire. I ask for whatever I'm going to ask for, and then eventually I probably settle for whatever that number ends up being. But, I mean...
So you don't get the free agency?
Yeah, I wouldn't... I will listen. The number starts with a 3. I'm not going to risk free agency.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
How can you risk free agency? God forbid you're the Mets. You say, you know what? Go ahead. See what you can get out there. I mean, there's a real chance he gets nothing near that kind of a deal. 10 for 325.
Well, you saw what they offered. I mean, Houston offered Correa 6 years, 120. He said no, obviously. I mean, he'll be a free agent. Look at the shortstops that are going to be free agents.
Well, that's my point also. I mean, if you're the Mets, you love Lindor, and I think New York will fall in love with him and don't even realize how much they're going to like him. But, I mean, look at the free agents. You got Seager, you got Baez, you got Correa. I mean, there's a ton of big-time shortstops that are going to be available.
But that's the other thing, though, too, with the 12-year deal. I mean, he's one of the best shortstops in baseball. I mean, he's one of the best baseball players, period, in Major League Baseball. But, I mean, 12-year deal. For a shortstop?
At the end of that deal, that's not going to look good.
That ain't going to look good. It'll be 28 in November. I just, in the thing with Lindor, too, I get why you would ask for the extra 2 years. Of course, you're going to ask for as many as you think. But, I mean, to all of a sudden now go from 10 at 325, which is 32.5, and ask for 2 extra years for 385, that's almost, you know, that's $32.1 million. Like, you ain't worth, in the last couple of years of that deal, you ain't worth $32 million.
No. Mm-hmm. Listen, there's a pretty good chance at the end of 10 years, he's not worth $32 million. At the end of 12, it's impossible to think that he's going to be worth that kind of money.
Yeah, so I mean, at some point, you probably, Steve Cohen, I would imagine, wants to get this deal done. It's not a great look because he said this is the last and final offer. This is his first big deal. I don't know if that sets a great precedent. Like, I'm going to stand, this is my number. We're not budging. But, I mean, I don't know if you end up splitting the baby. If I'm Steve Cohen, I would probably rather the 10 years as opposed to going the extra 2 years. But I ain't paying you 12 years, $385. I ain't. No, you're going to give me a discount. If I'm giving you 2 extra years, I'm not paying you $32 million a year for those last 2 years.
And the fan base is going to, they're going to become, I think they're going to take Cohen's side.
Yeah, they would. I think, yeah.
You don't think so?
No.
Really?
No. Okay. If they don't get Conforto or Lindor signed after they traded for Lindor, no. They will not take Steve Cohen's side.
Well, I think that Conforto deal will be easier to get done than the Lindor deal. But if this kind of money is out there with where we are right now, you know, just coming out of a pandemic and the economy, you know, struggling a little bit, people trying to find jobs and get back to work. Like, if he turns down $325 over 10 years, there's going to be so much pressure on him throughout the course of this season to produce. And I'm not saying that he's not, but I'm just saying I feel like the fan base will look at it and say, Steve Cohen made every attempt to try to get this deal done. He did.
Yeah, he did. And what more do you want? You guys have said it for weeks now. Well, the number better have a three in front of it. Well, it does. It's got a three and then a two and then a five. I mean, it's astronomical money. And no one's going to feel bad for Lindor wanting an extra 2 years. No one's going to. I don't think anybody's going to take that side of things. I think the court of public opinion will all be on Steve Cohen gave him a huge offer and this guy said no to it. I think people would be bothered by it.
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised how many Mets fans just feel like this deal needs to get done. They want Francisco Lindor. Like,
I get it, but let's throw it out there.
Well, it's not your money. I don't understand why is it
7-6?
But here's the thing: like, you're offended. It's not your money. It's Steve Cohen's money.
I get it.
There's no salary cap in baseball.
I get it, but
although that's what the owners are pushing for. There's no salary cap.
Huge amount of money. It's three. I mean, we're talking about well more than $250 million.
I know, but
it's not like the deal is unfair.
Put it into context, though. Put the whole thing into context. You're not putting it in the proper context.
I'm not.
No, you're not. With how this whole thing with Steve Cohen buying the team, it was going to be this new era in Mets baseball.
They would have never been able to offer a deal like this with the previous ownership.
Sometimes you aggravate me.
I don't understand why.
Because the whole point of this new regime with Steve Cohen was that we would now be able to go out and get the free agents that we wanted to get. We didn't get one of the free agents. One of the big time free agents we didn't get. We did not get one of them. Our big move was trading for Francisco Lindor. And every Mets fan that I know said that once you traded for him, you better get a deal done. This guy can't go to free agency. Mets fans will not be happy if this thing doesn't get wrapped up before the season starts and he goes to free agency.
I think Mets fans would also understand Steve Cohen not paying $385 million over 12 years.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
A little extra time in the Michael K. Show. Did you adjust quickly, Rick, to the 2 to 6:30 Michael K. Show?
I did.
And you loved it, didn't you?
No, I loved it. I mean, 2 o'clock is perfect for me. Outside with the kids, got the K-Show on. It was perfect.
Beautiful weather yesterday.
It was gorgeous out yesterday. A little windy.
Beautiful.
A little windy,
yep.
But it was gorgeous, yeah.
Today's going to be a little warmer without the wind, though. Today's a winter of a day.
A nice little suntan for me today.
Look at you.
I have a good story, but I can't tell it today. I have to wait on it.
As if it will be available to us at some point, as in you can never tell it?
Yeah, at some point during the week, yeah.
Okay, so now I'm intrigued. So if it's allowed to be told at some point, why can it not be allowed to be told today? I don't understand.
Well, because if I tell it today, the person I'm telling it about will know that I'm telling it about them. So if I wait a couple days, maybe it throws them off the scent a little bit.
I don't see how that's possible.
You think it's not a time-sensitive story.
Fine, but you think that the person that did this or is involved in this on Friday will forget that this was them?
Yeah, I mean, they'll be like, they won't know. Like, if I told you the story now and the person was listening, they'd know exactly who I was talking about. If I tell it maybe on Wednesday or Thursday, they would have a hard time figuring it out.
Quick break. Jay Williams on the other side. I mean, who are we dealing with here? Like someone with no memory at all? Like, Thursday, they won't remember that this was them?
People have a lot going on. I mean, they don't know. Like, they don't actually know what happened. Like, they're under the assumption that something else happened yesterday.
You live an interesting life, DiPietro.
But what actually happened would be probably a little bit offensive to that person.
You promise that you will tell us the story before the end of the week?
Yes, I will tell you the story before the end of the week, yes.
Okay. All right, I'm going to write this down because I'll probably forget, actually, to make your point even better. All right, let's go to the calls. 800-919-3776. RJ had 539 as the over-under for the first call. Let's go to Daryl in the Bronx. Good morning, Daryl.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I was just want to comment on that 325 that Steve Cohen is, dishing out. That's a heavy bag, you know. So for him to ask for 385, it's kind of crazy. And like I was saying earlier, I don't think Steve Cohen should give up that money because it's not like the Mets have to see him, you know, throughout the season, you know. So I think 325 is good. He wants the 385. I should let him walk. I mean, if Steve Cohen, I'll let him walk. Have a good day, guys.
All right. Thank you for the phone call. I don't think it has anything to do with seeing him or not seeing him during the season. I think that the Mets fan expects this guy to be a Met for a very long time. And I still think it gets done. I just think it's a weird position that we're in.
Yeah, but
he gave you the drop deadline of of Thursday.
Which is, but again, that's just an artificial, like you see exactly what him and his agent are trying to do here. It's an artificial deadline. There's no reason that during the season, his agent can't continue to negotiate with Sandy in the Mets.
Of course there's not.
Sure. So this is an artificial, because deadline make deals. This is an artificial deadline. And he's going to, he realizes that there's pressure on, because they traded for him, in how the Mets fans have reacted to make sure this guy gets signed. So he's going to try to exert as much leverage as he can. He asked for the 385. They said 325. And then you would imagine, because Steve Cohen probably wants to get this done, they'd find some compromise in the middle.
Listen, Rico, I understand a player asking for the moon and the stars when a team is eager to work out a contract extension. Like, if you're Lindor, they just gave up these assets for you. This was the big acquisition for the new owner who paid so much money to acquire the team this past offseason, I mean, this past year. I mean, you're talking about this being a new day in terms of the Mets' history and how they do business, and he's the richest owner in the sport. So, yeah, you're going to try to maximize this opportunity if you're Lindor. But if you're Steve Cohen, why would you negotiate against yourself? Like, it just doesn't feel like he has to go to the 385 level in order to get this deal done, whether it's now or whether it happens after the year and, you know, Francisco Lindor gets to actual true free agency. I don't feel like he has to necessarily get the player to put pen to paper just because he knows at the end of it, he can always make the biggest offer because he's got the most money of any owner in the sport.
I don't disagree with you that if they want to go to the, I mean, if they want to go to free agency and he lets him go shop himself, that Steve Cohen can offer him the most money. I just think if you're the owner of this team and it's supposed to be, you know, this whole new era in Mets baseball where we have the richest owner in baseball and he can, you know, spend all the money that he wants to spend. And then on top of it, he goes on Twitter and he starts, you know, asking.
Yeah,
Mets
I don't
fans,
like that either.
Yeah, but you put yourself in a bad light. Like, if the deal doesn't get done, you look like an idiot.
Well, here's the other side of it. Hinkie Haynes tweets in, Steve Cohen has $300 million in the cushions of his couch. He couldn't come up with another 50 or so to seal the deal. This is exactly what was supposed to end when Cohen bought the Mets, money getting in the way. This is not a stupid business guy, though. This is a guy that's made this much money because he understands what he's worth and what every player is worth. I don't know. If I'm Steve
Cohen...
Yeah,
but both sides aren't stupid, though. I mean, you're overreacting to this right now. Both sides aren't stupid.
If I'm Steve... See, here's what I would be concerned, and he's probably not. But if I was Lindor, then at some point Steve Cohen's going to say, you know what? Forget it. Then test free agency. See if you can get 10 and 325 somewhere else. Ooh. I don't think it ever comes to that. But if it comes to that, I don't know that deal's out there on the open market this offseason.
That's a great point, Dave. And that's not where you want to be if you're Lindor. Especially with what everything that the sport has going on, both the economics and being impacted by COVID, but then also trying to work out a new labor agreement with the players. Like, you don't want to be in that place if you're Lindor. So, yeah, this $32.5 million over 10 years, maybe it's not exactly what you want in terms of average annual value, but, Dave, that's not a bad deal. Based on the landscape of professional sports and baseball in particular, it's not a terrible deal.
Yeah, but
and it gives you that, and it gives you a certain degree of security in uncertain times. I just, if I'm a player, I'm not willing to make that risk and try to push the envelope for an extra 2 years on the back end of this deal. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but that is, I mean, you say average annual. I mean, that is. When you look at what the 12-year deal is, it's less than the. I mean, it's. It's just a little bit less than the 32.5
year offer
in the 10-year deal. But 32.5 puts him, I mean, right? I mean, he's right there with Nolan Arenado as far as average annual.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pre-pandemic contract that Nolan Arenado signed. I mean, if you're going to want to go that many years, you're going to have to take
what
a
haircut. What was Arenado, 8 years, 260? What was that?
Yeah, he's making 32.5. And they couldn't. Mm-hmm. They had a hard time. I mean, that was an albatross in Colorado. But he's a great player. Well, here's the thing, though. If you want the security of having a 12-year deal, you got to take a haircut a little bit on the AAV.
Right. That's right. Go 12 years at what? At 30 million? At 29 million?
Yeah, 12 years, 360. 12 years, 360.
And maybe that's the sweet spot. Maybe that's eventually what they land on. But if you're Steve Cohen, this is one of those things where you have to have a little bit of awareness and know exactly where the sport is going in terms of the economics, which I'm sure he does. And say, you know what, this deal that I'm offering you right now, this isn't out there. Now, maybe I give you a little bit more money in a contract just so we can kind of, you know, find some middle ground. But in terms of going to where Lindor and his camp wants him to go to with 385, like there's no reason for Steve Cohen to do that.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole thing, though. Like, just the optics of it. Like, just how he handled it with Twitter and then, you know, letting everyone know that they went to dinner and, you know, he ordered chicken parm, the ravioli wasn't good and everything else. Like, just the, like, all the, all the things that I would imagine, because it aggravates me as a Mets fan, would aggravate other Mets fans if this deal doesn't get done. And then to come out with, you know, the 10 years, 325 was our final offer. This is your first big deal. Like, if there's a thought in your back of your mind, like, I want to get this deal done, so, you know, 10 and 325 may not be our final offer. I may move up to the, you know, 12 and 360.
Then don't say it.
Then don't say it. Exactly.
Yeah, no,
right.
I agree with that. Like, because don't you kind of look foolish if you're Steve Cohen? And I'm in the he should accept this deal camp, just to let you know. But if you're Steve Cohen and you say, that's it, 10 and 325, I will not budge from those numbers. And you come back and it's 10 for 340 or it's 11 for 3 or, you know, whatever. You look kind of ridiculous, no?
How does he look ridiculous if he gets the deal done? Who cares?
Because
it doesn't look ridiculous. He got the deal done.
Your word means nothing then. Because you say that this is a hard and fast number and that's it.
Like teams don't go back on their word, Dave. Like teams don't say one thing. Like Dave Gettleman didn't tell the media that they didn't sign Odell Beckham Jr. to trade him and then trade him a couple of months later. Like that like it happens. People understand when sports teams do that.
But does Gettleman and the Giants look ridiculous for the way they handled the Odell Beckham situation?
Well, Dave, here's what I'm saying. Teams do that all the time. So, I mean, I don't necessarily know that it's going to make him look foolish if you sign a guy that everybody that's a fan of the team is excited that you were able to acquire via trade this offseason. I don't think he looks ridiculous.
Like, yeah, but Chris, this is his first deal. I understand what you're saying, that the teams do this all the time. This is his first big deal.
Exactly, and I can understand why he would be excited, why he would be on social media talking about it, why he would want to blab about going out to dinner with the player and trying to hammer out an agreement. Like, I understand all of those things, because let's keep this in mind. This is a novelty for Steve Cohen. He's a lifelong Mets fan. Like, this is something that he's looked forward to for a really long time, and he's going to revel in all of it. Including this piece of it. His first big acquisition, trying to get it signed long term.
This is a toy for him. And in doing so, he's having fun, and I think he enjoys this. I can't imagine in his real job he would go out there and be like, all right, this deal's done, and post on social media, we're going to acquire this company for $1.6 billion, not a penny more, and this is done, and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is fun for him. This is a game for him.
I understand what you're saying, and that's probably the truth, but it's not a game for Mets fans. It's not funny, you know, funny, jokey. If all of a sudden this deal doesn't get done and he leaves in free agency, it's not funny.
No, it's not funny.
Like, I get it. It's a toy for him, but for a Mets fan, it's not. I mean, we dealt with the Wilpons and all that came with that, and now all of a sudden it was supposed to be this, you know, this new era in Mets baseball where money wasn't a factor. And I agree with you guys. And I agree with you guys. The 10 years, 325 is a good deal.
It's a great deal.
And would I rather, I mean, a guy turning 28 in November, would I rather a 10-year deal instead of a 12-year deal, especially when he's a shortstop? Absolutely, 100%. But I can understand what both sides are doing. My only point is, if I'm Steve Cohen, until I know the deal is done and signed, I don't go on Twitter or anything else.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's no reason for him to be on Twitter. I mean, he's already gone on Twitter, looked, I think for lack of a better term, somewhat ridiculous, gone off Twitter, taken a hiatus, and now he's back. And I think he should not be on there. It's not a platform for him because he says stuff that gets himself into trouble. That being said, 10 and 325, if I'm in Lindor camp, I'm jumping at that. That's a huge offer. It's a huge deal.
Yeah, I'm not saying
that. He can
always
go back to that, though. I mean, he can always accept that if he wants to.
Sure. I guess that's on the table.
Yeah, but I guess the other part about it is, the other side of that coin, Rico, is that Steve Cohen knows that if it comes to it, he can make Francisco Lindor the biggest offer that he would have out there in free agency, and he wouldn't leave the team. You know what I'm saying? Like, you do have that opportunity. I understand that Mets fans are anxious to get it done, but it seems like money is a really important factor for Lindor, and Steve Cohen has a hell of a lot of it. So, I mean, if this thing has to play out throughout the course of the regular season, they don't get anything done, and he does go into this winter as a free agent, I still feel fairly confident that Steve Cohen and the Mets are going to be able to get a deal done. I'm not worried about Francisco Lindor going to another team. I'm really not.
Yeah, I don't think you should be either. Let's go to Anthony in Staten Island. Anthony, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, guys. Let me start with saying this, and it ties into the whole Lindor thing, is when I was listening to Kay, and he was talking about how there's no DH because, you know, the owners wanted more you know, playoff teams, and you know, the players are like, absolutely not. So this offseason is going to be a mess, and I kind of agree with Kay, it's going to be a standoff and everything. But when it comes to Steve Cohen, I think that you have a guy who's a major fan, who has a lot of money, and like, look, Lindor is he's a huge talent, electric, you know, huge athlete. But he did have a little bit of a down year last year. Chances are it's not going to happen this year. But if he does, right? So I think on his side, he should be concerned. But on the other side, you got Steve Cohen, who's constantly talking, you know, constantly out there like you guys are talking about. And so I think that Lindor's camp knows that he'll look foolish if he doesn't ultimately make a deal. And so likelihood is they'll definitely make a deal. I think for Mets fans, the concern is going forward, you know, there are deals out there that you know, you can't be out there like that, right? You know, you have to keep your mouth shut. And on this one, I think it gets done. But what about the deals going forward on some of the other players in the future? You just can't be out there like this. I don't think it works. So that's my opinion.
I think it's a fair point.
Well, here's what it is, though. What it comes down to is that we didn't get Bauer. We didn't get Real Muto. We didn't get Springer. And we traded for Francisco. He was supposed to be our big-time free agent signing. And he's not signed yet. He's not signed. And, I mean, if he says no to this deal and gets the free agency, is there a team that can offer more money than the Mets? Probably not. You could almost make the argument that it may be even smarter business. If you have every intention of signing him once he's a free agent, just let him play the year out, see how he does in New York. You know, see what kind of player he is. We all know what kind of player he is. You mentioned he didn't have a great season last year, but I would expect him to bounce back and then sign him. But, I mean, that's something I don't think Mets fans want to risk. They just want to get the deal done.
Yeah,
you don't want him to have the opportunity to go to another team in free agency. That's what it is. And I understand that. But how much of a premium do you have to pay to avoid that if you're Steve Cohen? Because certainly 12 years, 385 feels a little bit unreasonable.
No, you'd have to. I mean, if the 12 years is the sticking point, I ain't paying you $32 million for those last 2 years.
You can't.
Year.
Why would I give you almost the same amount of money for a 12-year deal that I would for a 10-year deal? How is that smart business from Steve Cohen, business guy?
No, I mean, you're talking about right now, to date, two position players that would make more than the $32.5 million a year. Mike Trout makes 35.5, and Rendon, who signed a 7-year deal, makes 35 a year. 32.5 would put him right
there.
Right there at 8 with Nolan Arenado.
Look at his numbers. I mean, not to mention the guy is just an elite defensive shortstop. 2 years ago, 32, 74, 22 steals, 100 runs, hit .284. 3 years ago, 2018, 38 home runs. This is out of the shortstop position. 92 RBIs, 25 steals, hit .277, 42 doubles. Led the league with 129 runs. I've said this before. I don't think Mets fans realize how good this guy actually is.
No, they will. You've seen glimpses of it. I mean, the guy can hit. I mean, he can hit for power. You see, I mean, defensively, he's the best. He's right there as the best, one of the best. Whoever. I mean, it just depends which shortstop you like the best.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's the best player on your team. Now, I mean, here's the one thing too with Sandy Alderson and the way they've negotiated or attempted to sign some of these free agents. Even with George Springer, they weren't willing to go the extra year. Like, that's a point of emphasis for them, is number of years on these deals. So maybe if they want to stick at 10, maybe it ends up being, 10 for 350.
Maybe.
Ooh.
If they're stuck at the 10 number.
35.
The 10
Ooh,
years.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of cash.
325 is a lot of money.
Yeah, but that's I mean, the difference between, 325 and 350. For Steve Cohen,
you're right. It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. It'll affect his life not at all if he goes up to 350 or he can go whatever he wants.
Yeah, but there is little bit of a trickle down effect in terms of how the club is impacted by making that kind of decision. I mean, Steve Cohen talked about it a little bit doing that Facebook Live. He said it makes sense if you're going to go past the luxury tax threshold that you blow past it. And you spend a bunch of money in order to try to give yourself the best crack at it. He just said it didn't make sense to go over the luxury tax threshold a little bit. So when you start talking about the deals that they have on the horizon, wanting to get Conforto done and seeing about trying to get Syndergaard under contract, like all of the different things that they want to address with the team, that extra money that we're talking about, although it might be insignificant to Steve Cohen personally, it could have an impact on some of the other things that the Mets want to do.
Yeah, but again, we don't even know what that number is going to look like. We're going to have a completely new CBA.
Yes. Sure. But I mean, I guess
I think that's an excuse that the owners are using right now, the luxury tax threshold. because they're positioning to have the players actually for the first time ever ask for a salary cap because they want to Florida the salary.
We'll see, but I mean that's even more reason for Steve Cohen to be conservative in terms of his approach and locking in these long term deals. Like, with that level of uncertainty.
But Chris, this was the deal. This is the deal.
I want it to get done, too. Like, listen, I'm not even a Mets fan, and I think Francisco Lindor is great for New York baseball. Like, I'm glad that he's here because I'm with you guys. I don't think that people realize how good he is around the sports world. Like, I just think that because he's been playing in Cleveland all this time, people haven't seen the full array of his talents on display in a major market. Like, I'm excited about what he can be in New York City. And I want them to get this deal done so he's around long-term too. But I also understand in terms of Steve Cohen trying to set a tone for what this regime is going to be about and how they're going to do business. I think it's important to make sure that, yeah, we'll pay guys, but we're not going to be a club that you can just take advantage of.
Chris tweets to us, with the new CBA coming up in December, maybe this could be the last massive contract. If I'm the Mets, I give him 12 years, $385 right now for the franchise player. Maybe MLB goes to a salary cap after this. I don't see a salary cap in the future of Major League Baseball.
No, that's not going
to
happen.
No, but yeah. That's exactly what the owners are trying to do to the players right now, is that we'll use the luxury tax threshold as a hard cap up the top, and then we got a bunch of teams that don't spend any money. So the players are like, well, we got to have some kind of floor then, which is the definition of a salary cap.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds like the banana in the tailpipe. Don't fall for it, Tony Clark.
They always do that to us, though. You know that.
They don't do that to the baseball union, though. They don't do that to the baseball union.
What do you mean? They got
the last collective bargaining agreement, the owners got over. Fair enough. But historically, the baseball union has been the strongest union of any of the major team sports unions.
Yeah,
no question about it.
Yeah, but historically they had Don Fear, who we have now in the NHL.
Well, Rico, I understand that, too. I'm just saying in the past, when they're negotiating labor agreements, baseball players has always had more favorable agreements than the other team sports. That's all I'm saying.
Feels like the NBA might be that league at this point, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That new television deal they got. Whew.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.